Aho pritapi driyater bhakarte. Racha shivaryena vinapitena. Yastve kaviro dirato vijegye. Dhanurdvitiya kakubhaschatasra. O my Lord, is Prita still living? She lived only for the sake of her fatherless children. Otherwise, it was impossible for her to live without King Pandu, who was the greatest commander and who alone conquered the four directions simply with the help of a second bow. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A faithful wife cannot live without her lord, the husband, and therefore all widows used to voluntarily embrace the burning fire which consumed the dead husband. This system was very common in India because all the wives were chaste and faithful to their husbands. Later on, with the advent of the age of Kali, the wives gradually began to be less adherent to their husbands, and the voluntary embrace of the fire by the widows became a thing of the past. Very recently, the system was abolished, since the voluntary system had become a forcible social custom. When Maharaj Pandu died, both his wives, namely Kunti and Madri, were prepared to embrace the fire. But Madri requested Kunti to live for the sake of the younger children, the five Pandavas. This was agreed upon by Kunti at the added request of Vyasadeva. In spite of her great bereavement, Kunti decided to live, not to enjoy life in the absence of her husband, but only to give protection to the children. This incident is referred to here by Vidura because he knew all the facts about his sister-in-law, Kunti Devi. It is understood that Maharaj Pandu was a great warrior and that he alone, with the help of bow and arrow, could conquer the world's four directions. In the absence of such a husband, it was almost impossible for Kunti to live on even as a widow, but she had to do it for the sake of the five children. All very much for your wonderful service to Srila Prabhupada and to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan mission. In my travels to various places in the world, people are very anxious to hear the pastimes of the devotees of Radha Gopinath Temple. And I am so happy to be back home with all of you once again. This temple has such a precious and wonderful opportunity to perform such a great service to devotees throughout all of the world. What is required is that we simply remain very humble in our desire to serve the Vaishnavas. And we are very sincere and strict in following the principles of bhakti. And where these two ingredients are there, there becomes a very great enthusiasm to chant the holy names of Krishna, and a great desire to preach the message of Krishna consciousness to others. When devotees are happy in Krishna consciousness, they naturally want to share that happiness with others. There is no greater preaching than a devotee that is happy in the association of devotees, happy hearing the narrations of the Lord's pastimes, and happy chanting the holy names. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrated in his own life that happiness is natural if we have relationships with other Vaishnavas based on the principles that Lord Chaitanya have established. And somehow, by the mercy of Sri Radha Gopinath, there's a very excellent chance for all of us here to demonstrate how this simple formula can attract the supreme power of Krishna to protect us and to transform the hearts of so many. During the last 3.5 months since I have seen you all, I had the opportunity to try to serve in various countries, in various places. And Srila Prabhupada has created a society where practically anywhere in the world we go, there's wonderful, loving devotees, like oasis in the desert, where they are so happy, glad to welcome Vaishnavas, to give prasad, to chant, to dance, to discuss Harikatha. How Srila Prabhupada has done this is the great pastime of Lord Chaitanya empowering his pure servant. However, although there are so many challenges and so many opportunities for preaching and serving in so many places, my heart, as fallen as it may be, is always counting the moments to return to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath's devotees. Today I feel very much the shelter of this divine satsang, and I offer my obeisances to all of you. Vanshakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patithanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo. This chapter that we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam is describing the great devotee Vidura. After he was put in a terrible predicament, He was just trying to be a good brother and a good friend to Dhritarashtra. But in this material world, anyone who tries to do good becomes the enemy of those who are envious of God. Vidura had wisdom. He understood truth. That wherever there is deviation from moral principles and from the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there must be suffering. And wherever there is harmony with the will of God, there must be victory. Vidura risked his life in so many ways, at so many times, to give Dhritarashtra good instruction. But ultimately, he was forcibly banished from the kingdom by Duryodhana and his brothers. He had to leave his good wife, his home, the surroundings of the environment he was born and raised in. But he was glad. He was sad for Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. He was sad for the city of Hastinapur. But he was happy for himself because he had the opportunity to completely immerse his life in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord in divine remembrance. And this is how a devotee aspires to live. That when there is a difficulty, a crisis, he accepts it as Krishna's mercy and becomes joyful. A materialistic person, when things go wrong meaning according to his conception of what he wants or she wants, the person becomes very depressed. Because people in this world are very spoiled and particular. Maya deranges the mind and gives you a conception of what will make you happy and what's good and what I want. And when that is not fulfilled, we become often depressed, we become hopeless, we become suicidal. We don't know what to do, or we become envious, revengeful, argumentative. We start justifying so many unwanted desires and activities and words. But a devotee, when put in the same situation, becomes grateful and joyful, that it cannot happen without the will of God. Krishna never forsakes his devotee. Yasya hamanagremani harisheta dhanamushanai. That when the Lord takes everything away, a devotee sees that as the compassion of God. And in that way, sees what opportunity is Krishna giving me now to surrender to him. That is actually the sign of a sincere devotee. If you want to monitor whether you are sincere or not sincere, this is an easy criterion. When things go all wrong in your life, do you see that? Do you search for the opportunity to serve Krishna in that situation and take it all as the mercy of the Lord? Or do you give up in that situation and justify, I cannot do it. How can anyone expect me to do it? Look what happened. Because going back to Godhead is a very, very serious endeavor. And Krishna only allows very, very serious devotees to go far on the path. Many will begin the path, but when it comes to a certain stage, many will fall away. It takes someone who is quite serious to continue on to the higher plateaus of bhakti. And it is not that we have to be great sages or great rishis. We can be housewives, we could be children, we could be simple farmers, or we could be scholars or politicians or businessmen or brahmacharis or sannyasis. The qualification is that we are sincere. And sincerity is really all that Prabhupada expected of us. But we have to show our sincerity. And this is how. The test of gold is when you put it in fire. The test of the devotee is when there is opposition to one's own personal selfish desires. Because in this material world, everything has its beginning and end. Whatever we gain, whatever we lose, is not very important. What we gained 20 years ago, we don't even remember today. What we lost 20 years ago is hardly in our memory today. And 20 years down the line, what happens now doesn't make so much difference. And in our next life, we won't remember any of it. So how important it is. So Vidura, he was actually a transcendental personality. And he was displaying by his example. He was kicked out of his house. He was separated from his whole family. He lost all of his wealth, all of his distinction, all the protection that he was born and raised and accustomed to living in. He was not a sadhu living in the forest. He was accustomed to living in Hastinapur, in the palaces of Hastinapur, his whole life. And all of a sudden, he was in the forest with no one. And he just, what opportunity is Krishna giving me now? Let me search out the saintly people. Let me remember Krishna. And he traveled, and here we find he's come to the, after going to so many various provinces, he's coming to the bank of the holy river Jamuna. And there, by the arrangement of Krishna, he is meeting with Krishna's own dear friend, Uddhava. How wonderful is the arrangement of Krishna, who is a supreme controller. It's not that they were planning a meeting with cellular telephones or using fax machines or computerized electronic mail that we'll meet at this time, at this date, on the bank of Jamuna. They were both traveling with no communication with anyone. But by the arrangement of Krishna, they just happened to come. When Krishna wants to help his devotee, by his own all-powerful, miraculous ways, he makes that happen. For many of us, we may have had some little sincere desire for something beyond material existence. Or we may have had that desire in a previous life and done some bhakti, or maybe some agyata sukriti. And how Krishna mobilized and orchestrated material existence in such a way that at just the time in our life when we would be receptive, he brings us in contact with Krishna consciousness. Every devotee that's ever come to this movement is an example of the miracle of God. There are so many stories. I know one person. He was just lost everything. He was failing in his exams. He was terrible depression. His friends were rejecting him. His mother was rejecting him. His father was disgusted with him. And he was trying. He didn't know what to do. So he decided he wanted to learn how to meditate. So he just started meditating. And then he went to the library because he wanted to learn more intimate, deeper details about silent meditation. So he went to this college library and he took out a book about meditation. And he was reading something, he couldn't really understand what it meant. And he put the book in. And somehow or other, as he moved the bookshelf, another book from the top of the bookshelf fell out and fell right on his head. And then fell in his hands. And he opened it up to a page. And the page he read said, "Silent meditation is bogus. It is not for this age of Kali Yuga." And he looked at the front of the page, and it was "The Perfection of Yoga by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami." And he was thinking, God must want me to read this. It must be his arrangement. So he read the whole book. He went to the temple. He became a devotee. How is it possible? Krishna makes these arrangements. In my own insignificant life, I was just walking down the street in Bombay. And I was longing, praying, crying out, God, show me the way. And then I walk into a pandal and there's Prabhupada. Come sit here. What I was even doing in Bombay, God knows why I was walking. Krishna is within the heart of every living being. He is directing everyone's wanderings. So here we find Vidura wandering, and on the bank of Jamuna he meets with Uddhava. And both personalities are completely immersed in separation from Krishna. And Vidura is here inquiring. And this is such a wonderful example. Devotees are always anxious to hear about Krishna, about Krishna's pastimes, about Krishna's qualities, about Krishna's beautiful form, Krishna's names, and very anxious to hear about Krishna's devotees. Vidura is first asking, because he knows Uddhava is coming from Dwarka, where Krishna resides, how is Krishna? How is Balaramji? How is the mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki? How is the sons, Pradyumna, the grandson, Aniruddha? And how is... He's asking about the various persons. How are the Pandavas? To hear about Krishna's devotees is none different than hearing about Krishna himself. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam is mostly the story of Krishna's devotees. The 10th canto speaks specifically and directly about Krishna's pastimes with his devotees. But the first 9 cantos are mostly just the lives of devotees who were surrendered to Krishna and how Krishna reciprocated. In the story of Prahlad Maharaj, chapter after chapter after chapter of Prahlad, and then Narasimhadev comes. So Vidura was so anxious to know about the activities of the Vaishnavas in relationship to Krishna. And this is what society is really meant for. Devotees should love to meet with one another and to discuss the glories of Krishna, the devotees in the scriptures, as well as the devotees who are present today. Today I came from the airport. Yesterday I was in the country of Germany. I was giving so many classes in Germany, and in one class I expressed something that came to my mind. I said, this is Germany. I asked them, does that mean this is a place of many germs? Germany? So this is a very good place to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a place where there are many, many germs. Germany, many. And somehow, by Krishna's arrangement, you had nice rains yesterday here in Bombay. The trees got sufficient nourishment. The trees of the city were very blissful, just getting all feasting. But the airplanes were not feasting. They were circling. So it was about 11-hour flight. And when I came off, somehow or other, through all the rains and rivers and floods, Shyamananda Prabhu happened to be right there, along with the Raghunath, Yudhisthira Prabhu, and some others. So immediately, we were just discussing various devotees. How is Radha Gopinath Prabhu? How is Krishna Chandra Prabhu doing? What is Gauranga's college preaching? How is Govinda's bus program? How are the Mataji's programs? They told me, why didn't you stay in Germany longer? Because there was a special medical treatment that was supposed to be very miraculous, and they were saying, please stay for this treatment. I said, because I came because I didn't want to miss the children's program. Let me die, but I should not miss this children's program. So in this way, there was such happiness, there was such elation of the soul just discussing the activities and the qualities of Vaishnavas. Not gossip and rumors, but very positive katha. What is the service? How is Swarup Damodar Prabhu's singing in kirtan? And how is Rup Raghunath Prabhu's dressing of the deities? And how is Abhiram Thakur's health? How is Murlidhar and Radharani's baby? All these nice discussions we could have. And this is not material subject matter. Anything in relationship to hearing about the activities of devotees in Krishna consciousness is hearing the glories of the Lord, purifies our hearts. So we have such a wonderful society here at Radha Gopinath Temple, where there are so many wonderful devotees. And actually, there's a society throughout the whole world. And wherever we go. When I was in London, it was just about 7 days ago, I met with His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And I was asking him, how is the devotees of Radha Gopinath Temple? He was very happy. For so many hours he was telling me, so happy. So this relationships amongst Vaishnavas is very precious, because it is our relationship with Krishna is through his devotees. So Vidura is inquiring about so many wonderful Vaishnavas. He's longing and he's eager to hear, what is the devotee's service? How are they serving Krishna? How are they loving Krishna? How are they surrendering to Krishna? How are they dealing with the mishaps that come in their life for Krishna? And in this particular verse, he is asking about Prita or Kunti. Is Prita still living? She lived. Vidura was traveling for so long, he didn't even know if Kunti was still living. She lived only for the sake of her fatherless children. Otherwise, it was impossible for her to live without King Pandu, who was the greatest commander and who alone conquered the four directions simply with the help of a second bow. Srila Prabhupada takes this opportunity to explain how in the Vedic society, how important it was for a wife to be very, very faithful to her husband. And how within the Vedic culture, the position of a woman had such a very, very great and grave significance in the whole of society. Something that is very much compromised and even forgotten in modern times. Actually, Srila Prabhupada taught us, according to the Vedic scriptures, if a woman is faithful and pleasing to her husband, then the whole society becomes very stable. Srila Prabhupada told the story of his elder sister. His elder sister had a husband who somehow or other was extremely degraded. He was drinking, I believe he may have been gambling, so many things. He was not at all moral or religious. But his wife was so gentle and so kind and so accommodating to do everything for him. She was just so pleasing to him at every situation that ultimately she conquered him. She had every reason to leave him, but she conquered him and made him into a great devotee. He just became so obliged to her for her chastity, her faithfulness, her always going out of her way. She would never ever compromise her own Krishna consciousness. She was a very great devotee in her own life. But for him, she would do so much. And he became, after years, he became so obliged that he just wanted to please her. He started chanting Hare Krishna and he became a Vaishnava. That is the power of faithfulness. These days, everyone wants to compete. But unfortunately, modern women have become very ignorant. Forgive me if I'm making any offense, but it's true. Women want to be on top of men, but they have no idea how to be on top of men. They want to be on top of men by fighting with them. I'm better than you, why you're telling me like this? And in this way, what happens? They fight, nobody's on top, everybody's miserable, and they usually get divorced in the Western world. In the Eastern world, not so advanced as far as this mentality. But if a woman is actually like this with her husband, she conquers him. It's a fact. And this is civilized society where people try to conquer each other through service, through affection, not through egoistic battles of who has a higher position. When a man considers his wife as completely subordinate to her, he becomes subordinate. When a man considers his wife completely subordinate to him, he becomes subordinate to her. And sannyasis know all about this. Grihasthas, sometimes they don't even know the trees from the forest. They're just in the whole thing. But the scriptures say, of course, a man, his responsibility is to be Krishna conscious, to be responsible, to take care, to protect. To protect a wife emotionally, to protect a wife financially, economically, and to protect a wife spiritually. And if a husband does like that, then the wife, she naturally wants to do everything for him. And this is Vedic culture. It's a perfect culture. It's the only means by which there can be peace. In India, we're trying to bring in so many new ideas and Western ideas and modern ideas. And what is the result? Misery. No culture. No harmony. No sanctity. Everyone wants to exploit. Everyone wants to defeat. Everyone wants to compete. The Vedic culture is everyone should want to serve. But Srila Prabhupada explains here that a woman who was faithful could not even live without her husband. He was like God. And they would gladly, Kunti and Madri both were just ready to go right into the flames to embrace that fire. They had no second thought. And Madri, she was allowed to fulfill her desire. But Kunti, she had to perform the severe austerity of not going into the fire. Because someone had to protect the five children who were very, very young and helpless at the time. This is the Vedic civilization. People understood something beyond just the body. If your husband's a great devotee and you embrace the fire, you go together to Krishna on some higher level of consciousness. But then things got degraded and families were forcing women into the fire because without the husband there, they just become a liability. They become an economic liability, so they're pushed into the fire. But that is not, sati means out of love, out of faith in the immortality of the soul, and out of such deep, deep commitment to the service of the husband. So of course, we cannot propagate this type of activity because it is against the law and very few people are of the consciousness where they can do it properly anyway. But we could understand how great and glorious and deeply dedicated people in this Indian culture of history were. The richest, purest, highest culture. Such devotion, such dedication, such affection. We should be proud of that. And at least in our ordinary dealings, we should actually try to develop these qualities of devotion. And then there can be actual real peace within society, and everyone can help one another to spiritually advance happiness. Kunti Devi, Srila Prabhupada is explaining, she she was requested by Madri to live for the sake of the younger children, the five Pandavas. and Vidura, he was there. He was in the kingdom of Hastinapur, and he was watching through so many years how those children and how Queen Kunti had to suffer. Not only did he understand from what he saw, but he understood the inner motives of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. When they were sent to the house of Lakh, who was it that saved them? It was Vidura. Vidura warned them, they're going to burn you to death, with so many indirect words. He sent the message to Yudhisthira. And he had them prepare the exit through the tunnel under the ground. And he sent the word when it was going to happen and how to get away. And poor Kunti and her five sons, they were living in exile. They were meant to be the kings of the world. They were hiding. And then later on, there was the gambling match. There was the attempt to disrobe Draupadi. There was a feeding of poison cakes to Bhima. There was banishment to the forest. So many insults. And Vidura was watching it all. And all along, he was the one person that was constantly preaching to Dhritarashtra, stop this sinful actions. Give them what they deserve. They are Krishna's devotees. It was Vidura who was actually sitting beside Kunti along with Bhishma close by when Radheya came into the tournament, and she recognized him with his kavacha and kundala, and she fainted. And the two of them understood this must be the son of Kunti. They watched it all. How much this woman, who was the most chaste, the most pure, the most virtuous, how she had to suffer. Why? Why would someone like this have to suffer? Even Bhishma said it is the inconceivable will of time, being directed by Krishna. Very difficult to understand. But one thing we can understand, whatever Krishna does for his devotee is perfect for that devotee's welfare. And in reality, through it all, Kunti is worshipped for the rest of eternity for her devotion. It was tested to the maximum, and she maintained complete remembrance of Krishna with a grateful heart through it all. So the Vidura, this great Mahatma, he wants to hear the glories of Kunti Devi. He wants to hear, because he knows by hearing about such a devotee, his heart will become purified. Krishna will be pleased. And he will receive Krishna's mercy. Are there any questions?
In the relationship between husband and the wife, when you explain that the it will be peaceful only if the wife she conquers the husband by her behavior. Now, even if the husband's behavior, he actually may be thinking that he is superior all the time, and that actually affects the wife. Even in those circumstances, the wife should not point out or try to explain as devotees that they're actually all on equal footing, and instead of explaining all that, she should just suffer in pain and try to conquer the husband, or is the act of explaining to the husband again a kind of confrontation?
Gandhari was also a perfect, chaste, and faithful wife. and she was constantly to it. But at the same time, she was always such a faithful, loving, and gentle wife. But she preached to her husband a lot. Srila Prabhupada is teaching us a very great science. Very great science. It is not that a woman requires to accept abuse. If a woman is being abused, she has every right to deal with that, report that. But we're speaking about a Krishna conscious society. In a Krishna conscious society, we accept, according to the authority of scripture, what is the nature of a man and what is the nature of a woman. The nature of a man, in general, there may be exceptions, is a man's nature is to be predominant. And a woman's nature is to be predominated. In a natural situation, a woman will be completely happy if she's predominated under the love and protection of a Krishna-conscious husband. And a man will be completely satisfied if he is predominating over a faithful, loving, and chaste wife. So this is nature as God has created. And the Creator knows. What happens in this situation is when the woman wants to be the predominator, except for some rare exceptions, it's impossible for the nature of a man to accept that. They just can't do it. And therefore, they're miserable. And the woman's miserable because she's not really in her natural position. So we're not saying women should accept abuse from a rascal husband. They shouldn't. They could, if they feel they could make their husband Krishna conscious. But beating and all these things, no. This is very sinful. A woman has a right to defend herself from these things. But the basic chemistry of how a man and woman should come together in marriage should be understood. And in modern culture, especially by the man and the woman. The man's nature is to predominate. He should predominate not in an abusive way, but in a protective way. And the woman's nature is to be subordinate. But she should be subordinate in a helpful, in a kind, in a Krishna-conscious disposition. But when the woman tries to take the position of the man, there is conflict. And that's what the Western world is all about. 72% of marriages are divorces. The men want to predominate, but they're not doing it in a mood of protection, they're doing it in a mood of exploitation. And women, in response, they want to predominate. They want at least equal say for everything. Actually, if a woman is chaste, the man will do anything for her if he's a good man, as a means of protecting her. So this is society. We should aim for this type of society. Does that answer your question? Extreme cases we're not discussing. Prabhupada's sister was an extreme case. We're not saying every woman could be like that. We're not even trying to advise it. But that was the power of her being a first-class Mataji. That was the power. She converted her husband and made him into a gentle, kind, humble Vaishnava. She had that power. But he wasn't abusing her. He was just fallen. So in marriages, the men and women, especially sincere devotees who are coming together for Krishna conscious, they should understand from the scriptures what their nature is, not from People magazine or what are these magazines in India? Stars or something like that. You will not learn what a woman's nature or what a man's nature is from these society magazines or newspapers or from ZTVs or anything. You learn from the scriptures. What is my nature? What is his nature? What is her nature? How we're supposed to live in harmony with our own natures together for Krishna and be happy. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned about how Lord Krishna's pastimes are discussed in the 10th canto. Is there any particular reason why in the first 9 cantos the Lord is referred to in different incarnations or as the Supreme Lord, but Krishna is not directly referred to by the name Krishna, not very often?
Say again?
In the first 9 cantos, The Supreme Lord is referred to by the different incarnations, but not very often by the name Krishna.
Often he is by the name Krishna. This whole chapter is about Krishna, and this is the 3rd canto. Hare Krishna. Whatever name he's used, they're talking about Krishna. Because incarnations of Krishna are generally also avatars of Vishnu, directly avatars of Vishnu. But Vishnu is avatar of Krishna. So it may be speaking on a more immediate level of incarnation of Vishnu, in fact, incarnation of Narayan. But the Bhagavatam clearly explains Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, that all the Narayan, Vishnu, Hari, they are all incarnations of Krishna. So whatever name is used in Bhagavatam, it's only describing Krishna. The culmination is Krishna. Any other questions?
Maharaj, just now you described about a model and an ideal man and a woman, the nature of a man and a woman. Now, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we get to understand the nature in its proper perspective. But we may come to Krishna consciousness at various stages. We are conditioned in a particular way. We have been exposed to different kind of concepts, thinking, due to which we have certain notions about what a man or a woman should be in today's world and how you have to prepare yourself, fence for yourself. Now, at whatever stage you are, how do you realign or reorient yourself to the model or the ideal you're talking about?
This is a very good question, because it relates not only to a husband trying to be a proper husband or a wife trying to be a proper wife, but it relates to a devotee trying to be a devotee. Some of us were not trained up and conditioned in following the 4 regulative principles. But somehow or other, Now we're trying to do that because we understand that that is the natural and progressive way of making spiritual advancement. There may be some of you in this room who are not trained from birth to chant 16 rounds every day when you first wake up in the morning. You were trained to drink tea and eat whatever and read newspapers and watch television and go to school. But somehow or other, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we understand that what's actually the best thing for awakening my original consciousness? To follow these regulative principles, to chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day. So the process of Krishna consciousness is the sincere endeavor to recondition ourselves, whoever we may be. In Western civilization, there's practically not even a sense that a child should obey their parents. And Western people come to Krishna consciousness and you're supposed to surrender to a guru. You're trained up to not surrender to anything, to do what you like, when you like, how you like, where you like. That's the way we're trained up in the West. To defy all authority. And Prabhupada came and told them, chant Hare Krishna, surrender to Krishna. So a lot of reconditioning due to materialistic civilization in which we were brought up. But if we are sincere, we should try our best. We should try to live by our own real nature, not by what exploitative materialistic civilization has trained us to be. If you go to the West, you'll find women are smoking cigarettes, they're drinking alcohol. And now in India, even women are like this. So this modern form of life is simply materialistic. It has nothing to do with spirituality. So yes, somehow or other we are what we are. But we should all be trying to improve ourselves. We should strive to be the best we can be for Krishna, whoever we may be. Actually, it's not that men have a higher position in Krishna consciousness than women. They don't. Women have an equal position in every respect as a man in Krishna consciousness, because we're not these bodies, we're spirit souls. And if a man thinks he's better than a woman, that man is a rascal. Man is not better than woman. They just have different roles. They have natural roles. And both, and whatever the role may be, is the best way that they could serve each other and serve God. So please do not misunderstand by thinking if a woman's nature is to be subordinate and a man's nature is to be predominating, that means man is better than woman or superior to woman. That is not what's being said. I was just in Germany, and to tell you the truth, women practically run every temple in Germany. I was just with one of my godbrothers at one of the biggest, and he said, you know, the women are so talented, they know how to do everything so well. The men don't know much of anything here. So that may be. Women have equal opportunities. One of the best temples in all of America is Columbus. And who's the president? Our dear God sister Malati. But she's teaching all of the young ladies. She has about 20 young ladies under her. She's teaching them how to be wives in the future according to the Vedic principles. It doesn't mean you're less. Prabhupada gave women equal opportunity in every way to make spiritual advancement. But there is a difference between the nature of a man and the nature of a woman. There's no difference in the nature of the soul. So Krishna is explaining, if these natures are going to be compatible to progress in spiritual life, they have to live by their nature. Not compete, but harmonize. If a woman does not act according to her nature to be subordinate with a man, there has to be competition. If she acts according to her nature, there's harmony. But she has to do it in Krishna consciousness, and he has to do it in Krishna consciousness. Then they both harmonize and make spiritual advancement and are exemplary for the whole society. Is that, yes?
Could you just explain what subordination is? It's taking instructions, following what he says. What exactly, when you talk about subordination, can you explain a little on that?
What is subordination? It means you are Prabhu and I am Das. Now the man should also think you are Prabhu and I am Das. But my way of serving you is to be the leader, and your way of serving is to follow. Haribo. In other words, subordination means if a man is Krishna conscious, the woman should assist her husband. She should always be anxious to assist him, to follow him, to help him. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Your question? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.